We are back. Welcome to episode 21 of Rake the Moon. We are broiling like chickens here in the summer sunshine. The football season, in one sense, could feel no more far away, yet at the same time, it is crowded upon us like a World Cup fixture schedule, and it will be rushing towards us before we think. Pre-season is due for players very shortly, so we have moved from our summer slumbers here, trying to hide in ice baths and fridges, to start to look ahead to the Swindon Town 26-27 campaign and what might unfold. So after a little break from me, Sam, hello again, how are you?
Hi, I'm hot, how are you?
That's a very, very good, summary. Gently perspiring and not really coping with climatic conditions.
No, it's gently at the moment. I don't think it's going to be gentle for too much longer. I think it's going to get quite aggressive soon. Luckily, I have a spot in my house which is a bit like a cave. So in winter, I have to heat it all the time, and my energy bill is ridiculous. But I'm making the most of it here, where I can keep a solid 22 degrees inside and feel okay.
Very good. Very good. No, because I live in what used to be a kind of farm cottage kind of thing. I think it is designed to be kept cool and have sort of pantries and things like that. So I'm quite lucky. That's the unofficial banter section. Look at us. This is what happens when we haven't talked to each other for a few weeks. The official banter section is very obvious. We are in the middle of World Cup as we speak, which has been reasonably enjoyable, I think, so far. But take me back, Sam. What are the first sort of World Cup memories you have that sort of you can spring to mind and kind of pin you down football-wise?
Yeah, well, my first major tournament was Euro 96 that I remember. But the first World Cup would be France 98. And particular memory of that was watching the England-Argentina game, in the Saint Etienne game. And my dad was actually at the game, but it meant that Mum was having to deal with three of us, and I was the oldest, so I had got to stay up and actually watch the whole thing. And I remember doing sort of Jan Åge Fjørtoft airplane celebration, running through the house where Michael Owen scored and running into where my mum was trying to put my one-year-old sister to sleep and getting an absolute earful for doing it. So that was my formative tournament was that. At school I had a wired headphone connected to a mobile radio in my pocket. The headphone went up the sleeve, and I was listening to commentary of Nigeria against Spain during geography or something like that. It was definitely the year that I got absolutely hooked to tournament football, and that obsession has never relented. What about you?
Well, that's good, isn't it? The only point for geography these days is to get you to grounds in the north when we get you travelling in. I've got some sights of hazy, but memories of Mexico 86 we're going back to here. I do think I can remember the hand of God goal happening without quite appreciating the full significance of it. I can remember running around in the garden for some reason, emulating the final between Argentina and West Germany, as it still was just then. So I wonder if that's a good place to come in on England support Maradona's artful deception, if you're of a South American persuasion, and cheating if you're Peter Shilton.
There's nothing better than a World Cup, though. So I think that non-major tournament summers, that my wife would completely disagree, always feel a bit bare. And there's just something about football in the sunshine, maybe not quite as aggressive a sunshine as we've got this week, but football in the sunshine, discovering players you didn't really know anything about, which I guess is another positive of the 48-team tournament this year, is that there genuinely are players that you've never really seen or heard of before. Having that sense of community that you get from club football stretched through the summer, from a national team perspective, I love it, and I'm delighted that my elder son is starting to show an interest in it as well, because that means that I will be able to live vicariously through him for the next 15 years as he discovers the magic of it all.
And if that's not what children are there for, I don't know what is. Okay, let's get cracking into the more domestic stuff. OK, Okay, so let's begin with summer transfer activity. It's fairly limited so far. In has come Mitch Clark, fullback, again, of decent age and decent experience, sort of fairly well travelled. Out has gone Darren Aldaker, who has prompted some of your Moonraker musings, shall we say, in particular. So shall we take the slightly unusual poise of looking at the man who's gone out first and why Darren Aldaker is going and why his sort of relationship with Swindon has soured?
Yeah, I think that it's really unfortunate for player and club that it kind of ended up as a bit of a waste of a season, because there is a player there and we saw it in the first 2 or 3 months of the season. He was really positively involved in a lot of the good stuff that happened in late summer and early autumn. And some of his numbers across the season actually are a lot better than you might think, particularly around passing accuracy, about some of his interventions in retrieving possession in midfield. Is actually the eye does not necessarily agree with the spreadsheet on a lot of what Darren Aldaker did last year. And I think a lot of the disconnect came from just his natural body language, which is quite languid on the field. And it doesn't necessarily give off the appearance of someone who is running hard for the team. And I think, you know, if you watched Darren Aldaker and Ollie Clark run the same distance, you would presume that Ollie Clark had run twice as far just by the way in which he runs those yards. And I think that worked against Aldaker a little bit. He had to adapt between loads of different positions, which won't have helped either. He came to the club with a reputation being a slightly more advanced player. He's not necessarily the holding midfielder. When you've got a holding midfielder to be that quarterback in Gavin Kilkenny, I think that it was hard to fit him in naturally. Holloway kept pointing to Finney Munro's departure and that seriously impacting him. And while, you know, Holloway's in the dressing room and sees the impact that it has, I think it's tough to blame it entirely on that. But from Shrewsbury onwards, when he gave verbals back after getting them when he was substituted, it all sort of went downhill. There was a little bit of a disagreement with the manager at Barnet, where he'd been dropped from the matchday squad. It was briefly, you know, there was a talk about him going out. It would have had to have been a non-league loan at that point. When he came back, I think he did make an impression briefly again, which was credit to him, but I think the relationship between all parties there was not one that was necessarily fixable, and for the best of everyone's futures, I think the move away makes sense. He's still relatively close-ish to his hometown. Southend are obviously gunning for promotion. They're spending. I'm sure that he won't have taken too much of a cut, if any cut, to go there, and you get a couple of years of security, so it makes sense. For Swindon, there's a bit more money that can be used in the budget to reinforce in other areas, or with different types of character profile, and that just makes sense in general. My personal opinion of him was that there's definitely a player in there, and it just wasn't unlocked by the way Swindon were playing and the positions that he was sometimes asked to play. And then in the second half of the season, it just all fell apart, and it was quite sad to see. I don't know, Andrew, you saw in person more of him than I did. Obviously, I saw a lot of him watching on telly. And did you feel that there was more there that was not seen?
That's a good question, isn't it? No, that obviously the eye test and Aldaker is a thing unto itself that you've kind of explained there with a good deal of precision. Now, I think there was one time he got stuck out on the right for a game, which was a little bit bizarre. But then, yes, maybe he's sort of partly a mixture of that kind of end-of-season malaise where lots of pieces were being put around in lots of different places in the hope that something could get the team back to the form that it showed in the first half of the season. The one other thing about the departure, and this will reflect back in this kind of conversation we're having about transfers and maybe playing style, is I'm not sure a player of that sort, the one who is kind of passing range, is certainly not of what you might think of as a typical League Two midfielder. I wonder how easy that will be to be found, and whether that they're prepared to let go of that skill set, although, as you say, I think it is much about him individually as what he does. What that sort of indicates about whether they're going to be a bit more direct or a bit more robust, or whether they will look and dig around and try and see if they can find another playmaking type to replace sort of Oldacre's role.
Well, I think they'll see Kilkenny as being able to do it. Obviously, his passing range is different to Oldacre. Oldacre can send a raking aerial long ball and be relatively accurate. In fact, his accuracy for long balls was amongst the best of central midfielders in League Two last year. Whereas Kilkenny is more sort of the intricate playing between the lines. If they can get Kilkenny turning in possession as they did in August and September, then there's a lot of potential for freeing up, you know, Holman and Drinnen and Snowden, and being able to attack the channels with ball at feet, or to go wider if they've got two big men up front and try and hit the box with good crosses. I don't think they necessarily will try and find someone of the same sort of character profile. They'll want someone who's good on the ball, but I think they'll want someone who's a little bit more robust off the ball.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So the new man in, the lone new man so far at time of recording, is Mitch Clark, the fullback, who for some reason I associate with Port Vale, but that doesn't necessarily do him an entire service, though that's where most of his games were. A couple of seasons at Accrington as well. Fullback, let's say, experience of a promotion, age 27, a fair number of games on the CV as well. So the acquisition of someone who's been around, knows the level quite well, but is not well into their 30s, perhaps might be a bit of a clue as to the way they're going to go, I think.
Yes, definitely. That age profile is what they're looking at. Holloway thinks he has or had too many 30-year-old or 30-plus-year-olds in the squad last year, and too many in the younger bracket. And so that middle group is where he's looking to hire. Clark, I guess, he's the sort of solid signing that is never going to make massive waves within any fan base, but generally appears to have been well appreciated at both Port Vale and Accrington. I think that Swindon see him as offering an option on either side, depending on the formation they want to play. I think, you know, if he could either be used as a wing back in a 3-4-3, you know, a 5-3-2 out of possession, or he could be used as a standard fullback, depending on what they want. I think if he was being used as a standard fullback, he's probably more likely to play off the left, even though he's right footed, because they'd be quite happy with John McGregor playing in a sort of more defensive role in a four. If he was playing as a wing back, then maybe he might be used out on the right. But it'll be interesting to see how they choose to use him. He does just seem to be, speaking to people who have watched plenty of him, to be pretty reliable, to be a guy who will run, which obviously we know that is something that the manager wants to see. And it seems like a reasonable signing. People have brought up his injury record. Looking at those actual injuries, they don't appear to be sort of repeated. They seem to be quite unfortunate, and therefore I'm not sure there is the sort of sick note characteristic that can be placed against him, which might be placed against some other signings in the recent past. I think that he's got past baggage, as everyone has past baggage, but I don't think that that's necessarily something to be concerned about. And he just seems to be a sensible early solution in a role that requires a bit of depth that's not there at present. So, yeah, fine by me. I think the Swindon fans are going to have to get used to the idea this summer, that there aren't going to be, you know, regular blow your socks off signings. They're operating in a free agent market that perhaps isn't a brilliant free agent market during a World Cup year. They're going to have to wait a little bit for some of those loans that might come out of the top flight academies, because they're waiting to see post World Cup what the domino effect is with any moves beyond. I think we will see a couple of waves of signings. I will get some this month ahead of pre-season starting on the 29th, maybe early in July. We'll get a few trialists through July, and then we'll get into early August, and I think that there'll probably be work still being done once the season has started. and pushing towards the end of the window. I don't think that we're going to necessarily have everybody in place by the time we get to Supermarine on the 4th of July.
Yeah, I look forward to the inevitable bit of trialist bingo. But I do think that point you make is sort of valid in that everyone would love all the signings, all the loanees to be ready to, you know, roll and go on the pre-season tour and all the rest of it. But there's so little gap for kind of Premier League sides, really, to kind of be able to get their players back in. And I assume some will still have a few lucrative pre-season tours that potential loanees will be trying to fill. So I think just like filling out the squad completely very early on is a bit of a delusion. But you do hope to see more of the kind of Mitch Clark style signings, I think. I'm going to call them, of those kind of players who have solid pedigree and some success at the level to bolster things out. And like I say, we'll see what indications they also give in terms of playing style. So let's kind of muse on that a bit, really. On behalf of the sort of Bieber, we were chatting with Billy Bowden. I think his sort of indication was that the idea was more of sort of running over teams next season, so kind of reviving that more pressing and aggressive style, or the kind of thing they perhaps did to Bolton, which we all look back on now in some kind of hallowed way.
Yeah, well, just because it was simply an amazing performance, wasn't it? I mean, I've said it regularly since. I just don't think that's the level of the squad that was there last season. It was an anomaly. It was an outlier that was fabulous, but just not replicable. And it would be great if they could hit that sort of consistency, that sort of level consistently. But it's also asking quite a lot of players at this level of football. So I think we will see it being aggressive. I think they will be built to press. It's whether that can be sustained whilst also creating to the level that they have been creating and scoring goals. But to be honest, most importantly for me, he needs to build a defensive unit that can function properly against the set piece and that can function properly in broken play. Because the reason Swindon have not been in the top seven, but you could argue for each of the last 2 years, is because of the number of goals they concede. You know, they have been pretty free flowing in attack. They've generally scored, you know, top seven worth of goals, but they're conceding far, far too many. And it would be useful to see a unit that has confidence in itself. I think this comes down again to whether Ryan Tafazoli can play 40 games or 20 games over the course of the season. But I know that they're looking to recruit someone who is of similar profile to him as well, who can play both with him and who can act as a deputy if necessary. And I think that's really important, because there was not that person in the group last year. If you look back, there were players who were very competent, but raw. So talking about Tom Wilson-Brown or Phil Mbete. And then there were players who were being asked to play defensively when perhaps you'd rather they wouldn't, like Ollie Clark. And then Will Wright, who I think was really struggled to find a sense of consistency and was being asked to switch between right back and centre back in a two and centre back in a three and be captain 1 week and then drop out of the match day squad the next, then come back as captain. And I just think it was just not a useful way for him to be employed. And equally, his performance levels struggled too. But the general point that I'm making is they didn't have an out-and-out solid League Two monster that can boss an opposition centre-forward for enough games. Because when Tafazoli played, the defence was pretty decent. Most of the clean sheets happened when he played. And he has both the leadership qualities and the experience to add plenty. So if they get someone else, not as, you know, not old, I'm not saying recruit a 30 plus year old just for the sake of it, but you can have someone who has the physical attributes and the personal character traits that can fill in that role. And I know that they're looking for someone in that respect. And I think they're pretty close to one of those. So if they can get that, then that would be very, very useful. And maybe we will see a bit more stability. I think that's where the season can be, I say one, the season can be positive if they improve defensively, because they've got the tools going forwards already at their disposal.
It's very hard after the end of last season, but I guess you can kind of look at it to some extent and say, you know, there is some sort of level of progress from, certainly from when Ian Holloway arrived, to being down at the bottom to being, you know, finishing in 10th, although it was 9th. Normally the points haul that Swindon got this season, the vast majority of times, would be good enough to be in the playoffs. So there's painting an optimistic picture that it doesn't necessarily need too much to be done with the number of players they've got already to go and have a good swing at the top seven again. So we shall see. And we look forward to the names that arrive. But like I say, I think solid sons of League One and League Two toil seem most likely. I was going to move on to the friendly programme and pre-season programme, because it is actually a step up, certainly from last year and probably from recent years. Like home friendlies against league opponents, two of them, Bristol City and Orient, a few non-league games scattered around. Nice test at Forest Green before the season starts. And, of course, the trip to Alicante. We'll discuss some of the more off-pitch aspect of Alicante in the question and answer pod, which will be coming out soon for Moonraker subscribers, if that's an incentive for you to keep up or initiate your support of the Moonraker on a paid basis. But just in terms of that programme, like I said, I do think in terms of the quality of opposition they face compared to recent years, they should find out much more about them.
Yeah, to an extent, I think so. It's definitely obviously got better overall quality than last year, and people can point to that as being an issue, but then they started perfectly fine, really. I mean, it wasn't too much of a problem. I always think that the actual level of the opposition in pre-season is perhaps a little bit overblown, because really,
we've not got anything else to talk about in pre-season.
Yeah, true. I've never been convinced that it's that important. It's more an exercise in, you know, structure and formation and shapes and systems and who works where and just getting actual game fitness. So it's good from I think it's good from a fan perspective to have the mix. People like to have teams that can be seen to be a challenge to them, but I don't necessarily see it as being a massive bearing on how the start of the season might play out. But it's interesting, they've certainly filled it with plenty of fixtures. It's good that they've got the Supermarine game in. It is early, but it's a really important game for Supermarine. I think it's worth about 15 grand to the club, and that can have a big bearing on their coffers for a year. So I hope that as many people as possible can get out for that 12 o'clock kickoff on the 4th. I'm not sure that there's going to be a great deal of intensity amongst the performance there, because they'll only train three times ahead of that. But it is at least an opportunity to support the community, and that should be applauded. The other games post Alicante, well, there might be one in Alicante. I don't know whether or not that game, which I think there's an option to play a Saudi team in that tour, but I'm not sure whether or not it's actually going to be taken up, or whether the manager just wants to make his players run for a week in the heat. He could have done that this week if he started a bit earlier. That would have been terrible. Imagine starting pre-season training in 38 degrees. That'd be horrendous. But yeah, the rest of them, they sort of flow quite nicely with a mixture of non-league and higher league at home, and obviously the behind closed doors at Palace as well, which I don't think the club have actually confirmed yet, but I believe is happening on the 18th of July. So yeah, it's a good mixture. It's a good mixture, but I don't think that there's a massive bearing on the season that the quality of the opposition has in pre-season.
You've been on a pre-season tour in the past in the Decano era, which I guess was very much a completely new squad who had to kind of learn to get along with each other, although to be fair, they probably had to about every 2 or 3 weeks, really, such was the turnaround of players in that era. Obviously, there's a significant core of the squad have got contracts and have been retained. So what do you think of the benefits of actually having that kind of time away in terms of sort of building bonds as well as doing all the physical work?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think if you've got a few signings in, then it's good from a bonding perspective. I mean, they've got 2 weeks, if that, less than 2 weeks when we're recording, I think, to get that together, for there to be a load of new signings to go with them. So I'm not sure how much that's going to impact, and you know how much it's the same group, but it is always good to get a group together for a period of time. In Italy, there were loads of new people. You know, it was the season of the 2012-13 League One season, so they'd added several new players to the group, and you know, De Canio had a habit of bringing players in and then throwing them out every other week. So there was plenty there for them to get on with. They were also out there 2 weeks rather than one. They played 2 matches, I think it was. So it was a bit of both bonding experience and a fitness experience, you know, double training in quite aggressive temperatures at times. Always felt particularly bad just sitting on the side of the training ground there with Chris Tanner and Chris Wise and just watching these guys just run laps in 28, 29 degrees round and round and round. And there I was filming them on a phone. I just thought, yeah, this is silly. So I think that there is that option to use for conditioning, whether or not, given the temperatures we now are starting to get through summer in the UK, we necessarily need to go away to get the warm weather training that you need. I don't know. But it hopefully will be a useful bonding experience for the members of the squad that are there. It's 6 days. They're going to be traveling on 2 of them. It's not going to be that many days where they're actually doing the training itself.
And a word, of course, on coaching staff, because Marcus Bignot is no longer part of things. He left at the end of last season. Gavin Gunning is there. Of course, the manager is there. What do we sense is likely to happen in terms of additional staff if required? And how much do you think a new voice is welcome and possibly needed after the second half of last season?
Yeah, I think those are two very distinct questions, because my gut instinct is that there won't be an external hire. Could be proven wrong, of course, but the gut suggests to me that that Gunning will be the de facto assistant. There have been sort of murmurings of the International Pathways manager, Dave Carney, having a coaching role. He was obviously a pro, good footballer, is well liked, it seems, around the place, at the stadium, at the ground. I think that is probably likely to be the makeup of it. My instinct would be that I would like to see someone else, but it would have to be someone I think that was able to get through to the manager and who he had a relationship with. And there aren't that many around the place that he's had past relationships with that would be available or that he would want. I think the main one that stands out would be Steve Thompson, who is his assistant at various places. But he's got a very comfortable role currently. So I don't see there necessarily being the right sort of person to come in with whom the manager has a relationship whereby the communications are clear, the understanding of one another is precise, and that they can dovetail to effect. And with that in mind, perhaps it is fine for him to have more of a brief where he takes complete control of training sessions. You know, previously he would take a watching brief often, and Marcus Bignot would lead parts of the session. It sounds like in this scenario, he's probably going to have to be hands-on the whole time. I think that it's probably likely that it sticks with that group. Personally, I would still be inclined to see if we could find someone that would be able to challenge him at the right times and to help him at the right times as well. But the indication currently is that it will be the group from within.
Yeah, if we do look at David Carnick, he didn't arrive with that much fanfare. For those who did miss it, he did have quite a long and nomadic playing career as a Australian, included Hamilton Academicals and Bunyokyor of Uzbekistan. So always good to see some Uzbek content in there. But he did have a spell with Ian Holloway at Blackpool as well. So, you know, there is a degree of football experience and coaching experience with David Carney, but quite how they'd connect and how he sees the game, I must admit, I have no idea. It will be interesting to see if he does take some kind of prominent role. And perhaps, as you say, it might need someone to occasionally have those sort of healthy levels of professional disagreement with the manager to try and sort of push and test him. Because it does sound a little bit like things went a bit sour with Marcus Bignot by the end. And that's someone who Ian Holloway has, you know, had and managed before on multiple occasions.
Yeah, I don't think that it necessarily was the most productive working relationship towards the end, and there needed to be a change. By the sounds of it, I think disagreements happen often, just they do in your workplace and mine. Well, I say maybe less so my workplace, given that I work for myself at home. I don't often argue with myself, but in most workplaces, there are disagreements, and they can be properly resolved. That's perfectly normal part of working life. But sometimes if it is preventing there from being progress, then there has to be a change. And perhaps that was the situation here. And if that was the case, then, you know, they're making a decision that in theory should improve what's being output. But we won't know that until we see the work on the pitch at the start of the season.
Yeah, which we will look forward to. And as you said, that Supermarine friendly is coming around with incredible speed, really. So there we are. We've kind of eased ourselves back into focusing on matters Swindon, as well as no doubt keeping an eye on World Cup as long as it goes on. Thank you very much for listening. Reminder, the Moonraker is supported by your subscription. So if you want all of Sam's writing and insights on all matters Swindon Town, please do consider becoming a paid member. We'd like to think it's value for money, and also on a philosophical way, increasingly the only way you can sustain journalism on issues of interest to you. So thank you, and we will talk to you soon. For those of you who are, like I say, paid up members, there will be a question and answer pod coming out very soon.